But first to an interesting consequence of the COVID-19 outbreak. Could it spell the end of the global wildlife trade? Just as with SARS, COVID-19 is a coronavirus linked to live animal markets, where both legal and illegal species seem to have been kept. Now, these markets aren't isolated to China. In fact, many exist in parts of our own region where trade in wildlife is rife. But this latest outbreak has confirmed the worst fears of experts who've been calling for an end to this trade on health, let alone humanitarian grounds. And now they warn that if drastic changes aren't made, it'll be a matter of time before all this happens again. My first guests today are among those advocating for change. Dr. Peter Lee is a China policy specialist for Humane Society International. He grew up in China. He joins me from Houston. And Dr. Christian Walzer is executive director of health programs at the Wildlife Conservation Society. And he joins me from New York. Peter and Christian, welcome to you both.
Good morning.
Could we go back to where this all began? The main hypothesis is that this virus emerged from a popular wet market in Wuhan. But Christian, it's been said this is a wildlife regulation problem, not a wet market problem. And that is where wildlife is introduced into this system. Is that how you see it?
Well, you know, the main problem is these massive markets that trade and sell and process wildlife that we see in all throughout Southeast Asia and in China that bring together, you know, massive amounts, different species, you know, porcupines, squirrels, rats, civets, all the rest of it, with some frogs and snakes thrown in the mix. And these are just perfect breeding grounds for viruses. And the key issue here is that these animals are alive as they're brought to the market. So they have a long time and lots of possibilities to shed viruses and share these viruses amongst them. So this is really key in these type of markets. And that's really the source of where we get these spillover events.
Because of the first 41 patients, 27 had been to this market. And in 2002, SARS, coronavirus 1, emerged from a similar market, didn't they?
Yes, exactly. And when you look at the genetics of the virus, then the ancestral origin of this virus is most likely in one of the horseshoe bat species from the area. And that doesn't mean that anyone had to eat that bat. It just means that one of these bat species over time was excreting a coronavirus, which then mutated and or reassorted with other species. And we just don't know at this time how it entered the human transmission chain. That's pretty unclear at the moment.
Although there is some suggestion that it came via the pangolin, isn't it, which is another small animal often seen for its aphrodisiac effects, the use of the scales to certain groups in China.
Yes, I mean, various
and critically
species
endangered,
have,
I might add.
Yes. First of all, it's critically endangered. I mean, it's being wiped out on a global scale. The amount of trade in pangolin, illegal trade in pangolins, is just staggering. It's really become, a very sought-after wild meat for the growing middle class in China. It's seen as a luxury item and a status symbol. It's also used in traditional medicine for skin ailments and rheumatism. But what has to be very clear at the moment, we do not know
what the vector was.
Host.
Okay.
Yeah.
And exactly. I take your point. Now, Peter, you want to point out that there are two kinds of wildlife consumption in China and that what we're concerned about here is industrialized wildlife trade, which has really only developed in China over the last 40 years. Is that right?
Yes, that's exactly right. So I would say we should, of course, we have to focus on the wet market. But behind the wet market, there is a chain of production which provides for the wet market. So even if you shut down the wet market in China or anywhere in the world, but there is, you know, concentrated breeding farms, that's also a major problem when large number of animals, you know, put together, you know, mixed with, you know, captive bred animals with wild caught animals, that's a problem. And also there is a massive transportation from the farms to the markets. So there are two more links in this, you know, huge problem of wildlife trade. So three aspects we had to focus on, of course, the market, the transportation, and the massive, captive breeding, which, source a lot of animals from the wild illegally. So the so-called illegal operation in China, wildlife breeding, is actually a cover, a legal cover, for a lot of illegal activities. Now, you mentioned about the regulation. There is a huge regulation problem in China. I would say there's no way this industry can be regulated, because China has the world's biggest livestock industry, producing 80 million, tons of meat for the 1.4 billion people. If you say, let's allow it to continue, but we impose regulation, there's no way you can regulate it, because China's regulatory resources have to be spent on the livestock industry, because that's the industry serving the 1.4 billion people. You cannot say, let's increase, regulation of this, wildlife for a small number of people. That's not
so,
the
well,
way
tell
to go.
Tell us, help us understand, who are these small number of people then?
This small number of people are the wildlife breeders, wildlife transporters.
And who are the consumers? Because they're the rich, aren't they?
Yes, the consumers composed of mostly the rich and the powerful. When I say that, this is why. Because, wildlife, for food can be divided into two parts. The part with the small number of animals, peasants got from the field, from the rice field, from the stream, from the water, like larches, like frogs, those are small number. People eat those for thousands of years and not big a problem, because the small number, no hoarding, no transportation, no big number, mixing together. But the other one is what I call heavy test wildlife, which include snakes, pangolins, monitors, anything in the wild which people normally did not eat in the past. And these heavy wildlife species have been massively, captive bred and transported. That's the problem. And this is the part more expensive, and only those people who are better off can afford.
And there also, you make the point to our producer that they've got immense lobbying power. So they, even if there is a temporary ban put on, which happened after SARS-1, when everything settles down, they lobby the people in power to have that ban lifted, because and they have a lot of clout.
Yes, actually they have started to lobby the Chinese government already. Now, this, business interest, successfully lobbied the Chinese government, right after, SARS, outbreak, and when government imposed, trade and sales, ban in 2003, they started lobbying the national government, and they were successful. Right now, they're also, trying to lobby the national government. But of course, this time is different from 2003. Mm-hmm. At that time, there was no, social media. Now today, it's a massive, voices against the industry. People are saying that the safety of 1.4 billion people in China, their interest should be override.
Interesting.
Should be now, much higher than
I'm going to come back to Christian, because I must say this has all been incredibly revealing doing this story. Wildlife trafficking currently generates up to $26 billion per year. I think this is worldwide, not just China. And environmental crime is one of the four most profitable illegal industries. And of course, Christian, it's correct to say this is not just China. Southeast Asia is described as the heart of the wildlife trade.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the figure you just mentioned is actually quite a low one. I've seen much higher figures than that. But as often, obviously illegal trade, it's very difficult to get a clear handle on how much money is being made. But it is huge. And a lot of people are also employed in this wildlife trade, especially in China. We're talking about a lot of people that are working in these farms and similar. And as you rightly point out, we've been focusing a lot on China, but this occurs throughout the Southeast Asian regions, especially in Vietnam, in Laos.
Well, a lot of us who travel there have seen that.
Exactly, yeah.
So are we seeing similar action being taken by governments in Southeast Asia yet to the Chinese?
Yeah, so it's really good. We are, you know, there was a temporary ban, I think 3rd of February, and then that was followed 2 weeks later now with a clear declaration on a permanent ban on any wildlife trade and processing related to the consumption in China. And on 2 days ago, the Prime Minister of Vietnam has also directed the government to promptly draft a directive to prohibit wildlife trade and consumption in Vietnam. And they're moving this fast because I know my colleagues are working day and night because they want the draft by the 1st of April. And similarly, our work in China is showing there's a strong engagement at the moment. We're revisiting and supporting changes in legislation and adapting legislation so that this permanent ban will be in place.
You're also watching India, I know, because they haven't yet extended any action concerning their live animal markets. But I wonder, very quick response from you both, what is the right response then, Christian, would you say?
Well, definitely we need to have a permanent ban of this interface, these markets, and we need a shift in, you know, people's and government mindsets because these spillover events and potential pandemics are really on the rise.
Might that not just drive it underground, though? Sorry to interrupt you.
No, you're quite right. There will obviously be an increase. Everywhere there's money to be made, you're going to drive it underground. There'll be illegal trade, but that is orders of magnitude smaller than what is now happening on an open scale and tolerate it.
And so Peter Lee, final word from you. What do you think is the ideal response now that is durable?
I would say, you know, China has to revise wildlife protection law to ban all commercial commercial wildlife breeding. And of course, you know, there will always be, you know, illegal activities. So we cannot, because of that, then we don't do the outlawing of the trade. So we have to outlaw the trade. So there is no other option.
Look, thank you both very much indeed. I think this could well be a serendipitous outcome of the virus, but obviously there's a lot to come. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Have a nice
day. Dr. Peter Lee from the Humane Society International and Dr. Christian Walzer from the Wildlife Conservation Society. And watch that space. That's a very interesting development, I think.